Hi, everybody. This is Ray Otis, and you are listening to Plundergrounds. Guess what? It's my birthday. And I have a tradition on my birthday of doing something creative. I often hole up for the day and write a little game or something, a tradition that I started 10 years ago on my 40th birthday. Well, 11, actually, because today I'm 51. So it seems in keeping that I would put out a podcast at least today, and I'm going to try recording directly into Anchor with no editing at all, so wish me luck. The big topic for today is going to be a preview of Advanced Sorcerers and Sellswords, and yes, I know the acronym for that will be ASS. I love it. Somebody suggested to me that the acronym for Sorcerers and Sellswords should be S and SS, and so it might be ASS with three S's, but in any case, either way you look at it, I like it. First, though, I have a lot of call-ins that I want to get to, and I don't want them to get stale, so let's start off with those. We have the Brothers Green, Spike Pitt, and Arfed with some thoughts, and then we'll hear from Logan Howard of the Swordbreaker Zine and podcast, and finally Rich Frazier from the excellent Cockatrice Nuggets podcast. Take it away, guys.
Mr. Ray Otis, once again, excellent podcast. Plundergrounds, for me, goes from strength to strength. I thought that was a very deserved shout-out for the DM dad, Robert Groves. His last episode, I loved it. It was really insightful. And the same with Plundergrounds. Veins of the Earth, good shout-out there. I've got my copy. I've got to do some more with it. But you've reminded me. And I'm going to focus my efforts in that direction. As ever, there's more to do than I think I can achieve. But I endeavour and gradually make progress to that end.
Hi there, Arfed calling. Just wanted to call in and say how much I enjoyed your joint podcast with Frank. I've been enjoying all the sort of link ups between the podcasts. I think it's something that everyone should give it a try. I personally like the two person format, so a bit of chatting between, so it's not just someone talking into their phone or mic. So yeah, keep it up, and I hope to hear some more soon. Thanks, bye.
Hey Ray, this is Logan from Swordbreaker. You were wondering if you should keep going with those whiteboard sessions, and I definitely think you should. That kind of content, I think, is just so thought-provoking, and I found it fascinating personally, and I hope that you'll continue to do that kind of thing in the future.
Hey, Ray. Rich from Cockatrice Nuggets. So, listening to your whole episode, I'm thinking to myself, man, I need to get How to Host a Dungeon out and re-roll it. And boom, you pick it up at the end and say it. I'm amazed. I love it. I really dig it. I have never gotten all the way through a dungeon. I always get distracted by something else, trying to, you know, get my tablet to work on my computer or trying to find some beads or something else, and I run out of time. But I really need to sit down and try and do it. I didn't know about the YouTube videos, so I'm going to check those out. And I wholeheartedly agree, man. You came up with like three solid things for underground exploration. I love Veins of the Earth. I love Tome of Adventure design. And How to Host a Dungeon. Man, one more thing I need to pull out this week. Thanks, man. Talking to you later.
Thank you, fellas. Those call-ins mean a lot to me, actually. I appreciate the love for my podcast and for the shows in which I dialogue with other podcasters. As you might know, I'm a little self-conscious about these things, and so it's good to get encouragement. I appreciate the affirmation on the virtual whiteboard talks as well. I wasn't sure how those were working, so it's good to hear that people like those. And what can I say, Rich? Great minds think alike. I hope you do get out How to Host a Dungeon and play through it soon. Please tell me about it if you do. And I have one more call-in that I was saving back from Carl Rodriguez. So here we go. This is Carl.
Hi, Ray. This is Carl Rodriguez here. Long-time listener, first-time caller, I think. I really enjoyed your latest episode of Plundergrounds, and I really liked the whiteboard exercise. I actually was thinking about it in my head. And what came to mind for me and how that whiteboard exercise inspired me was to think about Ringworld. It'd be kind of neat to put a campaign on like a Ringworld, and it's so vast and characters could travel for miles never knowing that they're on a big spaceship. And it also reminds me that is one of the game products that I passed on and I should never have. I think it was by Avalon Hill. There's actually an RPG for it way back. Anyway, thanks for the exercise. It was really fun. Bye. Okay, Ray, Carl here again. I just recalled that your latest episode was very deep, and it had another segment that inspired me to call you. I really liked how you highlighted the epic poems, Beowulf in particular, and it reminded me that, you know, we really don't have like a lot of Bronze Age type games. I'd love to run more games in a Bronze Age setting. I guess RuneQuest Glorantha is the one that comes to mind, but I've always wanted to run like a Greek heroic type of game, or a game inspired by, you know, Greek heroism in that age. That'd be kind of neat to think about that and try to develop it. All right, thanks again. Awesome podcast.
Thank you, Carl. That's a great call in. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, the mention of Ringworld got my ideas flowing. I think I only read the first one in that series, but I get where you're going with that. I've always enjoyed the idea of a colony ship game. I've never actually run one, not yet anyway, but one of these days I'll get around to that. Some of you know that I am a huge fan of vintage radio drama, yet another storytelling medium that I think we can learn a lot from as GMs. And there's a pretty good drama based on a couple of Heinlein short stories about a colony ship. The stories were published together in a book called Orphans of the Sky. I don't know when that was published, but the individual stories were called Universe and Common Sense, and those were both written in 1941. And I'm going to link the drama that I mentioned in the radio. I'm going to mention the... Yeah, this is what it is. This is me recording straight into Anchor. I'm going to link the radio drama show that I mentioned in the show notes for this episode. The audio is in the public domain, so if you have a spare half hour, I highly recommend it, and you don't need to feel guilty about downloading it or sharing it with other people. It appeared in the fantastic radio series Dimension X, and then later in the series X-1. And Dimension X was recorded in the 50s, so 1950 and 1951, and I think this episode that I'm mentioning called Universe is from 1950. The other topic that Carl brought up that interests me is Bronze Age games. At first, all I could think of was fantasy games that have kind of a Bronze Age feel to them, at least from a technology standpoint. So I was thinking about games like Tecumel, Glorantha, and even Dark Sun, actually. I couldn't think of any historical ones, so I tossed this question to my much more knowledgeable friends, Apocryphal Chris and Paul Mitchell. And guess what? It turns out that they are working on one, and it'll be out next year. That's pretty crazy. When I asked Chris the question, he says, "Now, why are you asking me this?" And it's just serendipity that he happened to already be working on one. I had no idea. I do know that Chris is a huge fan of Bronze Age Mesopotamian history, and he's been reading deep into that era for years, so I expect the book is going to be really good. I know he's a stickler for historical accuracy, so it'll be a book that you can trust. It's going to be an expansion to the Mithras game series, which is a modernized version of RuneQuest by Design Mechanism. Chris tells me that the game book will be called Mythic Babylon. Design Mechanism already has one published called Mythic Britain, and alongside Mythic Babylon next year, there may also be a Mythic Mycenae book, and also possibly one about New Kingdom Egypt in the future, all Bronze Age stuff, so that'll be really cool. Just a note, people often think of Classical Greece as Bronze Age, but that's really Iron Age. You have to go back to the Heroic Age, as Carl mentioned, essentially ending around the time of the Battle of Troy. And to get to Bronze Age Greece, so it's Heroic Age Greece that's Bronze Age, not the kind of hoplite era. And Paul and Chris gave me a list of other games to check out as well that are have some historical chops or are inspired by Bronze Age era history. And it's too much to cover here. Also, it's their expertise and not mine, so it would just be me echoing what they had to say. I'm going to record all their stuff in a blog post on jellysaw.com. So if you watch that space in the next day or two, you'll see a list of games that were inspired by Bronze Age history, and you can go have a look at them. Anyway, thanks again, Carl. As you can tell, I enjoyed your call-in, had a lot to say about it, and now on with the show. Advanced Sorcerers and Sellswords. I have been promising for some time to release a zine-sized version of this game through my Patreon. Today you can find it as a one-page game on my blog website, jellysaw.com, and I also have a pocket mod version of it up there as well. It's a hack of Lasers and Feelings, if you don't know that already, and I mentioned it several times on earlier podcasts and how it came about. I don't know, maybe I didn't tell the story. Maybe I'll tell that one day. But it is a hack of John Harper's Lasers and Feelings, and so it's very simple to play. It's easy to pick up and get to the table with almost no prep. You just need a couple D6s and a few people to play with. The zine version is going to add some minor features to the rules, but it will really be focused on just giving the game a little more room to stretch. The language of a one-page game has to be really parsimonious, and I'm going to enjoy taking a few more words to explain the core concepts, give some examples maybe, and provide some advice on how to run the game, as well as developing new settings for it. One thing that I would like to add to the game is some support for more long-term play. Now, I don't think of Sorcerers and Sellswords as a game that you would play for years, but I could easily see doing 12 to 24 sessions of it, almost like a television series. And in fact, I sometimes think of Sorcerers and Sellswords as my Thundar the Barbarian or Pirates of Darkwater game, because I think it's particularly well suited to cinematic weird fantasy. Adding some support for multiple sessions probably means giving players a bit more of a mechanical bite for improving their characters over time. And I want that growth to be more horizontal rather than vertical. And by that I mean something that reveals more of the character as he or she was in the first session, rather than representing some meteoric rise from peasant to a conqueror king. So what does that look like in Sorcerers and Sellswords? Well, I think it has to address several facets of character growth. At least it has to address competency and capability. Those are something that you expect when you're growing or advancing as a character. Competency meaning you get better at doing the things you've already been able to do, and capability meaning you learn how to do new things. Right now, I think I'm going to accomplish that with stunts. Once each session... Welcome to Recording in Anchor. I keep getting bings. My relatives back in Indiana are having snow today, so they're all excited. They won't be so excited come January. And I can laugh at them because I'm living here in San Diego, and I'll send them sunny pictures of me walking my dog in the afternoon in shorts and a t-shirt. And that's the joy of living in San Diego. That's the trade-off for high taxes and the cost of living out here, is that you get to make fun of your relatives who live in colder areas. All right. Where was I at? Okay. Stunts. That's how I think I'm going to accomplish character growth in Sorcerers and Sellswords. Once each session or adventure, the Overlord is going to tell characters that they have leveled up. And levels should probably max out somewhere in the range of 9 to 12, I'm thinking. After that, it's going to get a little silly. When you level up, I'm going to assume that you get two things. One is a new wound slot, and the other is a new stunt. And we can talk about the wound slot in a minute, because I want to define what a stunt is first. I think that's the more important of the two. A stunt is something that the player and the Overlord decide on together. Mechanically, it will most likely ensure that the player gets an expert or prepared die when they otherwise wouldn't have gotten that die to roll. Also, the stunt has to be based on something the character has shown in the fiction before, either in the most recent adventure or in an older one. That means the character has to have taken some action in the fiction and been successful at it in order to underpin whatever stunt they come up with. It needs to follow from what they've done in session. I don't want it to come out of left field. Show me the beginnings of it in an adventure, and then we'll build on that. Also, well, let's give some examples. A combat trick could be a stunt. A high ground attack, for instance, swinging from a chandelier or jumping off a balcony to give you a prepared die to do that. That'd be a good stunt. I think all spells are stunts. So if you want to be automatically prepared to cast a spell, then you would name that spell on your character sheet as a stunt. So let's call the spell Snakes of Wrath. I don't know where that came from. Snakes of Wrath, that's the spell you're going to cast. And that means you're ready to cast Snakes of Wrath at any time. You're prepared. Otherwise, you wouldn't normally get the prepared die unless you spent time to set up for it and did some ritualistic sort of things. Profession is another example I was thinking of. So you might write, I was once a sailor on your character sheet, and then you would get the expert die on specific sailing stuff. So yeah, those are probably good enough examples to be going on with. Let's talk about wounds. The way wounds work in Sorcerers and Sellswords is that you pick up a fictional tag. Characters only die when it seems right in the fiction and the player agrees to it. And before you make fun of me for designing a story game in which characters die only when their players say they do, I want to take a little tangent here and talk about fictional damage versus hit point damage. Hit points are a cold reality. You run out, you're dead. Or you run out and then fail all your death saves or whatever, and you're dead. No argument. You might get a little sore about it, but if the GM gave you chances to run away and or you were pushing your luck, that's tough, right? Roll up a new character. But fictional damage, while you may not die from it in Sorcerers and Sellswords, can get really personal. It can push your buttons far more than hit point damage can if the GM, or in the case of Sorcerers and Sellswords, the Overlord, is aggressive with it. So let's say you've already taken a couple of lesser fictional tags, like a gash across the forehead that's dripping blood into your eyes, and then maybe you took a rapier in the thigh, giving you a bit of a limp. And you decide to stay in the fight, but get the worst of it. The enemy has you beat and has you in its power to some extent. As the Overlord, I could have them chop off your fingers or blind you with a hot iron. How do you like that? Hit point damage is sounding pretty good right now, isn't it? But here's the thing. The cool thing about fictional damage is that you can turn it into fictional awesomeness. Let's say you're an archer and I, as the Overlord, pull that bit about lopping off all your fingers. Boy, you're screwed, right? How are you going to come back from that? Well, maybe you could find a cleric who can heal those fingers back. Boring. Or maybe you can find an evil cleric that will graft on troll fingers, if we're going to go back to some of my earlier podcasts here. Or maybe a gnome artificer that will build you a clockwork glove with fingers driven by magical gem power. In either case, that hand may be twice as strong now as it was before. In fact, you could use one of your stunts for that when you advance your character to, you know, write in troll fingers or gnome gauntlet. But let's get back to the point of how that extra wound slot works in character advancement. The wound slot. What does that mean? Well, let's say that we add a wound system to Sorcerers and Sellswords. At base, it doesn't really have a quantifiable wound system. Characters don't have X number of wounds. So if we add them, I'd say a first level character probably can take 2 wounds maximum before it goes out of action. So each level, you would add to that. At level 2, you would have 3 wounds before going out of action. At level 9, you would have 10 before going out of action. That means you can keep fighting, keep going despite all those wounds that you've taken, but the fictional tags still all apply. If your forehead gash is bleeding into your eyes, the Overlord might work with that, making you roll 1 die only to avoid an attack from above from a piercer or something, but you could keep going. And at 0 wounds, you'd go out of action. Dead? Maybe, if it makes sense and you agree to it. Otherwise, you're somehow incapacitated and can't take action until the fiction changes. This means that monsters and other threats would also get wounds from 1 to, I don't know, 15 or more. So you would have to succeed against them multiple times to take them out of action if they had more than one wound, which would be good for particularly bad dudes like dragons. And if I go this route, I would probably make a 3-die success, the best one possible, cause 2 wounds instead of just 1. And that's it. Pretty simple, I hope. Straightforward, I hope. I'm not trying to rebuild D&D here, after all. Just add a bit of richness to a game that's already quite a bit of fun. So that's my thoughts on advanced sorcerers and sellswords. This is Ray Otis signing off. You have been listening to Plundergrounds. You can find all the relevant links to my stuff at www.rayotus.com. That's RAYOTUS. The intro and outgoing music is You Can Use Me by Captive Portal. And until next time, look out for rust monsters.